Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to a special bonus episode of the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast. Today you'll hear Seth talk to legendary comic book writer Tom King. King then takes a few more questions from late-night producer Henry Melcher and Closer Look supervising writer Sal Gentile. Now let's go to Seth and Tom King.
Our next guest is a CIA counterterrorism officer turned comic book writer. He's currently writing DC's best-selling Batman series as well as the breakout hit Mr. Miracle. Please welcome to the show Tom King, everyone. Thanks for being here, Tom.
What a pleasure, you nerd.
I know, I am a nerd, and I, you know, went and to look into your biography once I sort of was a fan of your work, because I read a bunch of books of yours that I really liked. And then I sort of assumed you were a nerd, too, but then it turns out your background is very unique to most comic book creators. You were a CIA counterterrorism officer.
Well, it's only about half of comic book creators were in the CIA.
Yeah. It's great. But you were a comic book fan before that. Did you still have your comics with you? Were you able to read comics in your counterterrorism years?
It was actually an odd benefit because in the CIA, sort of the thing you do is you pretend to be other people so you can get across borders, get into places that they don't want you to know you're the CIA. And most of my colleagues, bless them, wore suits like this and looked very much like James Bondian and kind of crossed as nice businessmen. And I would always cross as the super nerd comic book writer. I would go on an airplane. I would spill on myself. I would read comic books. I'd have graphic novels with me. I'd basically be me. And they'd be like, that guy could not ever be CIA. So let him in, please. No, he can do no damage to anything.
Very, very smart of you.
Yeah.
Your run of Mr. Miracle that's ongoing is fantastic. I was a Mr. Miracle fan of the character. And so I'm reading issue one, and it was one of the great things of my life. Now, I should point out, this is not me. This is a character named Godfrey. Yes. But Mr. Miracle goes on a late-night talk show, and Tom, I know you didn't draw this, but come on, man, admit it. That is me. I'm clean.
That is drawn by the greatest comic book artist out there, Mitch Gerrits. And legally, I'm not allowed to say it's you. So illegally, it's so you, man.
That's good.
But don't tell anyone I said this.
I promise I won't tell anyone. I promise, and I will not sue. But please thank Mitch for me, because that was a great moment for me reading this.
That's classic CIA. We always tell someone, don't talk about this after we talk to them.
You also a great run on Batman right now, and you did something that has not happened in Batman's 78-year history. He, at issue 50, he's marrying a Catwoman.
Yes.
So this is very different writing than what you do. This is not action-oriented. This is not crime-oriented. This is a love story. Did you have a different approach to writing about this?
It was, like, so much easier because mostly what I write is people punching other people in the face.
Yeah.
And I don't do that too often.
Right.
Like, you know, like once in a while I'm punching a guy in the face, but not like every day.
Right, it's not your normal thing.
It's not my normal thing. But I actually have been married. It's something I've actually gone through.
Yeah.
And so I can actually write about what it's like to be nervous in front of a wedding, what it's like to be in love with a woman. I mean, madly in love with my wife, so that helps.
Were there logistic differences when you think about what that wedding was like? Did you have to actually ask practical questions?
Yeah, because look, here's the problem. Is Batman Bruce Wayne, or is Bruce Wayne a disguise, and is Batman the real person? And if Batman is the real person, Bruce Wayne's a disguise, does Batman get in the tux with the mask on and the leather go over the tux or under the tux?
Yeah.
And then
who do you invite? I mean, guest list.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. And she's got some, like, that's a real case of they don't like each other's friends.
Yeah. Yes. She knows all the villains. He's like, no.
Oh, where am I going to sit them?
Yeah.
Are you surprised? Comics are so much more mainstream now than they were when we were growing up. You have two kids.
Yeah.
Three kids. Do they think it's cool what you do for a living now that comics are such a big thing?
I so wish they did.
Oh, really?
No. My son is into wrestling. Okay. Why? it's the same thing. It's people in costumes punching each other.
Yeah. It's like, they're exactly real.
Yes.
Yeah.
And no. They look at me. I look at myself as a nerd, and they look at me as the super nerd.
Do their friends think it's cool that you write Batman?
Well, I did have that moment where you get to go into the room for the parent, meet the parents, say what they do. And I was so excited. I thought I'd be the guy before Steve Martin in Parenthood who totally impresses everybody.
Yeah.
And I went in this is it. I'm gonna tell everyone I'm CIA cool, Batman super cool. And I went in and I'm I write Batman. You know, I didn't have any questions. And the lady presents you. Do you write Spider-Man? I said, there's corporations here, and who buys.
Oh, that's cool. They love knowing about the corporation side of it.
Yeah. I was like, so I'm sorry. And then another quick yes. And they're like, why don't you write Spider-Man?
That is unfair. Well, I want you to know that I am very impressed, and I'm glad I got a chance to meet you.
Sweet.
Thank you so much for being here, Tom. Such
what a pleasure.
Tom King, everybody. Mr. Miracle 9. Comic Stores tomorrow on Batman 50, available July 4th. We'll be right back, everybody.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. Here with Tom King, a critically acclaimed comic book writer, and Sal Gentile.
Oh, hi.
Look supervising writer. And Sal, tell us why you're here as well.
Yeah, well, I was accosting Tom backstage. And they saw that, and they asked me to come here and continue to accost him on this audio medium. So that's what I'm here for, because I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. Tom, you've been very kind. You've been signing books pretty much since you walked in the door.
Signing is the most normal thing I've done since I've been here. This is all very odd to me. You have genuinely beautiful people in the show, and I'm genuinely bald.
So you were just talking about Mr. Miracle and Batman. Another project you have coming out this fall, which is super interesting, is called Heroes in Crisis. Can you talk a little bit about that project and why it really kind of means something special to you?
Yeah, I have a very sort of weird history that I was in this CIA in my 20s and, served overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan, and like a million other Americans. And I feel like we've sort of gone through these generations of kids going over there and coming back and sort of going through this violence and coming out of it. And I think it sort of changed America in some fundamental way. That's sort of, I don't know, the character of this country to have this forever war that we go through. And I wanted to talk about that. And I was like, how can I talk about people living lives of violence and it changing them? I was like, oh, wait, I write comic books. That's all they do is live lives of violence. That's all Batman does is punch people in the face. I wonder if that would eventually affect him psychologically. I mean, he must have more than two psychological instincts. It can't just be his parents died. Something else happened after that. So we're doing a whole series called Heroes in Crisis, which is about that. It's about PTSD. It's about the effects of violence, and it's about how the superheroes deal with that and can't deal with that. And it's to sort of talk about these issues and also to talk about what the world's like right now.
How does your CIA work find itself in your comic book writing?
I think legally I have to say not at all, never, not even once, or else some kind of black mask takes me away and puts me in a black mask. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I literally can't talk directly about it. I can't put it in a comic. If I get close to the line, I have to submit my scripts for approval to the CIA sometimes. But it does affect every single thing I write, every single thing I do. It's not fortunate to have done it, but I did something in my 20s that was more than just sitting behind a chair and writing, so I can write about something that I did, kind of.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, you mentioned you've had to submit if it mirrors too closely or draws on your CIA work at all to the CIA. So you wrote a critically acclaimed, incredibly popular and beloved by fans series called Sheriff Babylon. Did you have to submit that?
Yes. Every script was submitted We submitted full comic books. It's probably the first time they get. I mean, these CIA guys mostly they probably get like people's dissertations or like some op-ed in the Washington Post. And you're like, here's a comic book, people shooting each other.
What a treat! How exciting!
I know, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
somewhere deep in the agency.
It has to be like a respite from all the papers like Raytheon is writing or something like that.
At first, I got them very slick, but at the end, I get them right away because they're like, "What's this cliffhanger? You know, who dies in the next one?"
So your first audience can be the CIA. That's amazing.
Yeah, I was worried they would leak it. I was like, no, they're the CIA. I think we're cool.
I'm so interested in how you reckon with the implications of the violence that superheroes are participating in, particularly Batman, as you mentioned, because you make such a fascinating point, which is that with superheroes in particular, with the cinematic universes, there's so much focus on origin stories. And then from there, it's kind of like just sort of events take over. But traumatic things happen to them afterward. Like, it isn't just their origin story that is traumatic and makes them who they are. They are continuing to do traumatic things throughout their existence. So I'm so fascinated to hear how you reckon with that.
Well, superheroes are really weird just from an intellectual... I mean, there are these icons, right, where we write them as icons. And because of that, each writer comes to them and only wants the iconic elements of them. You come to Batman, you just want a person whose parents died who had like one Robin. And so you almost want this sort of platonic ideal of Batman and to work with that. But when you work with a character for a long time, like I have a Batman, you sort of see like your own writing and you get to reflect yourself and the changes you put in, knowing sort of the next guy will erase it. But you combine all that with this character has existed for 78 years on some level in the real world, and the fact that he's had effects on some people. I mean, there's more stories written about Batman than there are of any other character in the history of anything, including like the Bible. And so that has to play into it too. So both all the things mix up into this weird meta fictional thing, and that's what you're going for a combination of the iconic and what's happened over 78 years. It's a weird balance, but if you hit it, it feels right.
I'm a huge fan of your Batman run, which you have been running for a while now. I'm just sort of fascinated by this basic question, which is like, what is it like taking over essentially a character that is, I think, inarguably the most sort of iconic in superhero history? I mean, I guess you could say Superman otherwise, but like specifically though, feels like American mythology. Like there's just so much like, so many people have had their take on Batman. I'm so fascinated to hear just like what it feels like when you take over the Batman run, especially from writers preceding you, people like Scott Snyder, who had just been writing it, who are also sort of like acclaimed as well, what that feels like taking that over.
Well, I mean, on one level, it's nice because it justifies you finally with your mother-in-law because she's she's heard of something you've actually read. Because everybody's heard of Batman, yeah. So at least you get that. When you're writing like Suicide Squad, you're like, what? So that helps. But on the other hand, it's like, I should say, oh no, it's easy. And you know, you just write what's in front of you, but no, it was like super intimidating and I was super scared. I remember Scott Snyder, who wrote before I took over, we got super drunk at a con at 3 a.m. and just sat there trying to tell each other things that had not happened to Batman. You were like, has Alfred been Batman? Oh yeah, we just did that. Has Alfred been the killer of his parents? Yeah, totally. That was done. Like we could not think of anything. And
that is so fascinating because there are so many like, all of the sort of Elseworlds and non-canon tales, like it's so amazing to think of. Like you mentioned, has there ever been a thing where Alfred was Batman or like
100% Alfred's been Batman? Yeah. Yes, and Suez Gordon has been Batman. And every single person in Gotham City sort of takes a turn once a week.
Scott Snyder wrote an acclaimed series where Dick Grayson was Batman.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and what sort of my discovery, and it took me a little while to find my sea legs on it, was everyone, I think, especially. Following, because the problem with Batman, the real problem for me is that Frank Miller wrote the perfect Batman stories, Your Year One and Dark Knight Returns. Like, you can't write the best Batman story anymore, and I'm an arrogant mother fudger. So like, I want to write the best of everything, but I know I can't write as well as Frank did on those comics. So that was always super intimidating. And what I found was what Frank did was he sort of found the hidden pain in that character and how and gave him more pain and saw how that sort of sharpened him like you would a stone. And I figured out if I did the opposite, it might be more interesting to go someplace he hasn't been, which was to make him happy and see like, this is a person, he takes pain and turns it into hope. He's a machine. I take pain, I turn it to hope. And so what happens if we break that machine and instead give him happiness and give him pleasure and give him someone he actually genuinely loves? Like, does that mess up the machine? Does that make it not work? And I was like, oh, now I'm finding something that hasn't been done before. I'm not leaning into what makes him darker. I'm leaning into what makes him lighter, and we're exploring a different part of his psyche. And then I sort of found my legs and started running.
You mentioned like this idea that you sort of like, there are these titans before you, feel like you're never going to write the best Batman story. I want to just take this opportunity to recommend what is one of my favorite stories of all time to people, your run on The Vision, which is, people will be familiar with The Vision from, if you're not a comic book fan, from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, from the movies. And The Vision is great in the movies, but this story, it will just feel to you, and I know every other comic book fan that I know, it feels unlike anything else you read in comic books. And even if you're not a comic book fan, The Vision, Tom King's run story in The Vision, it's like 10 issues, is it?
Or yeah, it's 12 issues.
12
yeah.
issues.
But it's all collected together.
Yeah,
now,
so collected
it's all
into, yeah. It's super easy to find. Anybody that you know who reads comic books, I can say safely, will tell you that this is one of the best stories that they've ever read. And for me personally, the best Vision story I've ever read. And it's so fascinating because it's a character that is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So a lot of people know the character from that movie. But this gives you a whole dimension. I'll just say basically, because I feel weird summarizing your story to you, but basically the Vision tries to create a family for himself. Yeah. And it's this sort of deeply, sort of like painful suburban experience of the Vision trying to have like normalcy in the shadow of all of this, of being in the Avengers essentially. So I'm just sort of interested in what inspired that, especially because you're taking on this character that has all of these that, you know, that people know so well in this completely different context.
I mean, that was a lot easier than Batman in terms of the great Vision stories weren't sticking out. That book I got at, I remember I wrote the first issue, we're about to go on vacation. And it was one of those things. I'd broken into comics after, you know, I quit the CIA and I was a full time house dad. You know, I was a stay at home dad. You know, I've changed diapers. I went from, you know, I had a gun in my hand to having diapers in my hand. and I was writing comics, and I was writing this comic called Omega Men for DC, which I love, and it got canceled. And I was like, oh, my career is over. I sort of don't have anything left. And I had this one issue Vision. I was like, I'm sure this will get canceled. It's such a weird idea. And so it was one of those issues where I just kind of threw out all my insecurities and threw out, I was like, what if I just try to write the best I can and forget everything else? And it became sort of something. And I mean, yeah, I mean, inspiration, I mean, I'm so obvious. I try to write different characters and I always write myself. I mean, it's about a guy who's living a life of danger and trying to put a family together. It's exactly what I was doing in the CIA when I sort of couldn't do it anymore. When I was trying to live one life in the CIA and one life as a stable father, and it's seeing that all fall apart. And that's sort of where the Vision came from.
I mean, I will just say in that way, it's extremely relatable. You know, your experience is obviously super specific being in the CIA, but anybody who is like just feeling as though, like if you're just somebody who feels like you are trying to find space in your life for having like, for preserving like your own humanity separate from like all of the things that happen. I actually feel like it's super relevant to like, in a way, weirdly, now that I'm saying that out loud, maybe I'm confessing too much to somebody who spends all of his time constantly consuming news about Donald Trump and writing about it. But like starting to think about myself, like, fine. But then suddenly trying to find, like trying to create like normalcy for yourself. It's just such a fascinating and incredible story. So, because you mentioned the thing about writing.
But it's so funny because you all day long, I consume the same news you do and it drives me crazy. And you get to an outlet to pour it into. I always feel like in comics, I can't address it directly. Whereas literature can't sort of, I wish I could do what you did and sort of, you know, here's a groundwork, here's some sanity into it. I have to go towards sort of from the side, like thematically and stuff. So I'm envious of
But
you.
I do, but see, oh man, we're just going to trade envies now because I'm super envious of your ability to explore these universal themes through these iconic characters. So in a way, I'm trying to do the Vision story through a closer look, I guess.
I see it. No, I totally see it.
So that is just incredible to me. You know, I recommend that story to anyone who wants to, even if you're not a comic book reader generally, like if you just know the character, even if you just want to pick up a great story, like that is one of my favorite stories of all time.
You guys are the nicest nerds ever.
You walked into a den of nerds. You didn't realize when you were coming to a late night talk show, you didn't realize that it was just going to be this nest of buzzing nerds who are like, oh, please tell me about the Vision story and Omega Man, and I love your Batman run. But that's what happened. And
but I watch your show religiously to get especially closer look every time it's on, to get away from sort of to get away from the day and back to reality, and I'm great, and I'm really grateful for
we're sort of in this Mobius strip of like you're trying to get away.
I'm
trying
to I get it.
But also I'm trying to get away from Donald Trump, so I'm reading comic books and I don't
this was great, Henry, thank you so much.
I'm here.
Sorry, I'm just letting this
I just completely bulldozed
no it's great
over.
It was great,
but
I loved it. I went from interviewer to audience, and I loved it. It was very
well. You
enjoyable.
Produced the whole segment, so now
and now you took over. It's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. I got.
Was
to
it
watch
okay? Did
segment?
I ruin it for you? Did I do okay?
It was an awesome interview. This is super fun.
Yeah,
all good.
Oh, you guys are the best. This is a fun show, and you guys are so nice. You, everyone who watches the show, in case you're wondering, everyone behind the scenes is as nice as they seem.
Yeah, I always say like it's a fun, funny show. It should be a fun, funny place to work. Like if it was
you
really,
say that? Is that
yeah,
a
like people like because a lot of times people when they come, they say everyone is so nice here, and I'm like, it's a comedy show. It should be like nice. It. You would hope it'd be a nice,
that's
fun
a
place
nice,
to work.
No, it's just such you know a nice, mean? Tidy little catchphrase that you have. I never heard that.
What am I? I probably not as tidy as that. Yeah, that was like weirdly tidy.
Yeah, it was
good.
Like practice.
Yeah, it's
like,
on my desk.
Yeah. I have, you have it like sewed into a pillow at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have the opposite because I write these dark, sad comics all day, so I like don't want my house to be at all anything right. like my job.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here.
What
it's
a
really
pleasure.
Fun.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank
come
you
back.
So much.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this, perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients, popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.